struggle between flesh and blood, but it's in the spiritual realm. And at the center of the struggle is our archenemy, Satan or the devil. And today, in the message this morning, again tonight, I hope that we'll be thinking about that spiritual struggle as we move through these two studies. It was in 1918 that World War I came to a close with the surrender of Germany. And one of the stipulations of the peace treaty was that Germany would not rearm. But in the 1930s, over in Great Britain, there were warnings sounded that Great Britain needed to build up its armed forces because Germany was rearming. And the leader in the warning was Winston Churchill. But the people of Great Britain and other countries scoffed at him and called him a warmonger. And then in September of 1938, Neville Chamberlain, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, went to the Munich Conference, attended by Great Britain and Germany and Italy and France. And when Chamberlain returned home to Great Britain, he said, "We have achieved peace in our time." 1 year later, in September of 1939, Hitler began to invade the surrounding countries. And the rest is history, because that threw us into World War II, which was a life and death struggle for liberty. Neville Chamberlain had to resign. Chamberlain had adopted the policy of appeasement. And it's the policy of appeasement I want to talk about this morning and again tonight. And we're going to look into four areas. We're going to look into political appeasement, cultural appeasement, domestic appeasement, and religious appeasement. And three of those things I want to lay before us this morning, and then tonight I want to talk about religious appeasement. And you won't want to miss that. Let's begin today with political appeasement. Political appeasement did not work for Chamberlain in Great Britain. And it never does work. And why doesn't it? And there are three things that we can say here. First of all, it doesn't work politically because it appears that somebody is weak. And when Chamberlain, representing Great Britain, followed political appeasement, it said to Hitler, "You're weak." And so he did not hesitate to invade the countries around him. Second, political appeasement leaves one open to those who are evil. It makes us subject to those who are evil. We look like we're weak, and then we're at the mercy of evil. And number three, evil is and must be opposed. And that's a biblical concept. In Romans chapter 13, Paul shows that one of the reasons God has ordained government is that government is to oppose evil men. And in Romans 13, Paul says that the government uses the sword to combat evil. And the sword is an implement of war. It is right to have policemen. It is right to have the sheriff. It is right to build an army. Now, we should not be people who are trying to conquer the world. But we must resist evil. And that's one of the purposes of government. Appeasement does not work politically. We can hope it will and wish it would, but it doesn't. It puts us at the mercy of evil. It smacks of weakness, and evil must be actively opposed. Now, let's move to a second area. Let's look at the culture and how we approach the culture from the standpoint of appeasement. Now, we live in a time when there's a lot of emphasis placed upon being politically correct. You want to say the right thing, and you want to say the right thing in the right way, because you never want to offend anybody. Now, it surely is not the position of the Christian to go around offending people. We don't need to do that. But being politically correct often causes us to turn our backs on principles that should guide us in our lives. We hear a great deal in our culture today in the realm of morality about an alternative lifestyle. An alternative lifestyle. Do you find it interesting that the Bible does not talk about alternative lifestyles? That is politically correct. But I want you to hear the word of the Lord. This is what he says in Romans chapter 1. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lusts of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason God gave them up to vile passions. For even their women exchange the natural use for what is against nature. Now that's what God says about an alternative lifestyle. First, it is against nature. Now if we ever come to the day where we cannot read this passage in public assembly, I'm going to jail. Because I have freedom of speech in this country, like others have freedom of speech. And I can read this statement from Scripture. But that's not all that Paul said. likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the women, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful, and receiving to themselves the penalty of their error which was due. In the Old Testament, in the book of Leviticus, there was this statement as a part of the law of Moses. If a man lies with a male as he would lie with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. That's the way God looks at alternative lifestyle. In Leviticus 18, verse 22, you shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. Now, you probably will not hear those passages referred to very much in politically correct circles. What I'm saying today is that those who choose to live that lifestyle never seem to be satisfied. For they not only want us to look with favor upon what they're doing, but they want us to approve it and adopt it as our own thinking, that it's just all right. And I'm here to say today that approaching any kind of problem simply from the standpoint of appeasement will not work. It will not solve the problem. It will not make us more godly. Appeasement doesn't work in the culture. Look second here at entertainment. Now, we've come a long way from Clark Gable's four-letter word in Gone with the Wind, haven't we? Some of you have never heard of Clark Gable, and some of you have never heard of Gone with the Wind. But you've heard a lot of four-letter words. Not only in movies, but on television. Over and over again, we see in entertainment profanity used as though that's the way everybody talks. I don't believe that. I don't even believe that's the way everybody talks where those programs are made. I may lead a pretty sheltered life, but I've been in the world a while. And I know that there are some people who use filthy language. But I don't believe that's the way it is in life as it is portrayed on television and in movies. And I've noticed that not only is sexual immorality promoted in programs on TV and in movies and bad language, but I've also noticed that in several sitcoms on television that there will be a person who lives that alternative lifestyle. And have you noticed that they're always pictured as being the best person in the sitcom? And so we approach that problem with appeasement. We'll rush home from church and watch the TV program. Or we'll go to the movie without any kind of investigation. Now, I found myself in some pretty bad situations. But I do try to be selective about where I go and what I watch. But approaching this problem in entertainment with appeasement is not going to make it better. Good people will have to rise up and say, enough is enough is enough. Then look at a third area. Human rights. We believe in human rights as a people, don't we? We believe that men are created equal. We don't always practice that, but that's what we believe, that men are created equal. And when the founding fathers of our country established this nation, they stated that principle. And so, we as a people believe in human rights. But, as Christian people, we would want to believe in human rights. But groups like the ACLU have pretty well gone to seed on human rights in some areas. For example, we hear so very much now about the separation of church and state as though that is stated in the gospel. Well, it isn't stated in the gospel, and neither is it stated in our Constitution. Oh, but there's the First Amendment. And there is. And it says, and we all would support, and we all believe, that Congress shall not establish any religion. We wouldn't want to have a state-established church, would we? Like some countries in Europe have, even until today. No, the Congress is not in the business of establishing a religion. And the Constitution of our country forbids that. But the founders of our country were God-fearing people who invoked the name and the blessing of God upon what they were doing. So when they said that Congress will not establish a religion, they were not giving us freedom from religion, they were giving us freedom of religion. And in this country, you can choose to be religious or not, to go to church or not. But to say that as a country, we cannot state the name of God in a public assembly is ridiculous. The founding fathers did it and our leaders do it even until today. It's rather ridiculous, isn't it, that you cannot pray at a football game, but prayer is led in Congress? Isn't it ridiculous that you cannot pray in school, but prayer is said in the Supreme Court before it begins its sessions? Where is the logic in that? The fact of the matter is, that there are elements at work in our country that want to remove God from our lives. And they seek to use the Constitution to do it. And appeasement will never solve the problem. The point I want us to get today is that the policy of appeasement does not work. It does not work in any area. It does not work politically, and it does not work in the areas of morals, in the culture, in entertainment. It does not work in human rights. Now let's move to a third area. The policy of appeasement domestically in our family. I'd like to put three words before us and then discuss those words for a little bit. In our families, we need, and the first word is honor. We need honor. Second, we need love. And third, we need discipline. Now let's just put those three words up there. We need honor, We need love and we need discipline. In Ephesians chapter 6, Paul begins by saying, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother." Kids are supposed to honor their parents. And out of that honor, there will come obedience. Children, obey your parents. Honor your father and mother. Now, there might be obedience that is prompted by fear of consequences. Therefore, there can be obedience without honor. But I hardly see how there can be honor without obedience. And I would just like to pose the question today, in your family, who is in charge there? Sometimes it's difficult to see whether the parents or the kids are in charge. Now, the kids, bless their little hearts, the kids do not have a lot of experience and don't have a lot of wisdom. Those two things come with time. So God gave to kids their parents. But the parents sometimes don't know what role they're supposed to fill. And so the kids become the king of the roost. And nobody likes to be around kids like that, because they're out of control. And the parents wring their hands. Appeasement, we don't want to spoil their personality. Appeasement will not make it better. There needs to be honor and obedience. And parents are to lead the way. The parents really are. Here's an announcement that may be news. Parents are in charge. Now, the second word is love. In the family, people look at each other and they say, "I know all of your good qualities and I know all of your bad qualities, and I choose to love you anyway." That's what it is. It's a choice. I choose to love you anyway. I wrote down three words that have to do with this matter of love in the family. The first word is affection. Affection is hugs and kisses. The second word is affirmation. In the family, people need to be told when they do right. We're pretty good about telling them when they're wrong. We need to tell them when they're right. There was a study went on throughout the nation with the conclusion reached that every time you give somebody a negative, you need to give them two positives. And that when any meeting, a meeting in the boardroom or a meeting in church or a meeting in the home, when any meeting begins with a negative, the entire course of the meeting will probably be negative. Is that to say that we never point out anything wrong? No, that's not what I said. But for every negative, there needs to be two positives. Listen to these words. "Today I said, look at this mess. I failed to say, I like the way you share with your friends. Today I said, don't talk so loud. I failed to say, your ideas are important to me. Today I said, don't forget to empty the trash. I failed to say, you accept responsibility well. Today I said, I wish you'd stop that silly giggling. I failed to say, I'm glad when you're happy. Today I said, have you finished your homework? I failed to say, I'm glad you do your best. Today I said, I'm too busy. I failed to say, let's do something together. Today I said, I need some peace and quiet. I failed to say, I'm glad you're my child. Today I said, don't ever do that again. But I failed to say, I love you. Loving somebody means affection. That's love, hugs, and kisses. But it also means affirmation. And then the third word is attention. There is first A, affection. Second A, affirmation. Third A, attention. Cornell University did a study of 1,000 dads. And they found out that those dads talk to their kids 37 seconds a day. 37 seconds a day. But the dads are so busy providing stuff. The kids need you more than they need the stuff. It's dealing with domestic relationships with appeasement. The third word is discipline. All teaching, all training is discipline. There's corrective discipline and there's instructive discipline. But all teaching is discipline. Discipline is not a bad word. And you know something? Most kids want some adult in their life who will say, this far and no further. Two kids were talking. One of them said, nobody tells me what to do. I do as I please. I go when I get ready. I come back when I get ready. Nobody tells me what to do. And what that kid was really saying is, nobody cares about me. This far and no further. You know, when I was growing up, my mom used to say, don't do that. Why not? Just because I said so. That made me so mad. And I said, when I grow up, my kids want to know why they can't do something. I'm going to give them a reason. I'm never going to say, because I said so. I grew up, had some kids, said, don't do that. And they said, why? And I said, because I said so. Sometimes that's the answer. Because I said so. But kids need somebody who cares enough about them, they'll say, that's enough. And sometimes to say, we don't do that. We don't do that. Others may, but we don't do that. Everybody else is doing it. You know what that means? That means one of their friends do it. Everybody else does it. Kids need discipline. And sometimes they need corrective discipline. Listen to this. This is pretty hard stuff. Proverbs 13, 24. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. There's a lot of stuff in Proverbs about that. Did you know it? You may be saying, well, as a parent, I don't believe in that rod stuff. Okay, that's fine. But what are you doing to discipline your kids? How you discipline your kids? How is it that you're training them the way God wants you to? Ephesians chapter 6 said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. And a moment later, he says, and you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Teach them God's way and encourage them to walk in it. Teach them what's right and encourage them to do what's right. Oh, but if I say anything, bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Teach them the right thing and encourage them to walk in it. Appeasement won't work. Someday when my children are old enough to understand the logic that motivates a mother, this mother wrote, I will tell them, we loved you enough to ask where you were going, with whom, and what time you would be home. We loved you enough to insist that you save your money and buy a bike for yourself, even though we could afford to buy one for you. We loved you enough to make you take that Milky Way back to the drugstore with a bite out of it and tell the clerk, I stole this yesterday and I want to pay for it today. We loved you enough to stand over you for 2 hours while you cleaned your room, a job that would have taken me 15 minutes. We loved you enough to let you see anger, disappointment, and tears in our eyes because we believed you should see that your parents are not perfect. We loved you enough to let you assume responsibility for your actions even when the penalties were so harsh they almost broke our heart. But most of all, we loved you enough to say no when we knew that you'd hate us for it. Those were the most difficult battles of all. We are glad we won them because in the end, you won something too. The policy of appeasement has never worked politically. The policy of appeasement will not work culturally. And it will not work domestically. Now I'm going to stop there and put a peg down, and tonight I'm going to take up at that point, and I want to talk about religious appeasement. It'll be important. But this morning, I want to make an appeal for people to respond to Christ, because He is the answer in every area of our lives. Politically, culturally, domestically. If you're not a Christian, I would make an appeal to you to respond to the gospel of Christ. As a penitent believer in Jesus, openly confess your faith and be baptized into Him for the forgiveness of sins. If you're a child of God and you're not in a proper relationship with Him, I would encourage you to respond to the invitation of Christ, even today. We're here to help if we can, and the response is up to you. Let's stand together and be singing.